Welcome to Disarming Persuasion, the podcast for sales and business leadership professionals. My name is Dave Rosenberg, and I am the founder and principal at Locked On Leadership, a consulting firm with a mission to replace Thank God It's Friday with Thank God It's Monday. With me is my co-host, a man who can literally teach sales with one hand tied behind his back, Darren Cecil. Darren, what are we going to discuss today?
Conflict, Dave.
Which conflict? You know me. I'm a military guy. I love conflict. Which one are we going to talk about?
Man, we could pick and choose. We could talk about just how we never have conflict with us, though, right?
Yes, we do.
I don't think we do, Dave. I think you're wrong. I think you're definitely wrong on that one.
You know, I'm often wrong, but never in doubt. In this case, I'm not even wrong.
All right. See, I can't win, so I'm just going to give up. So I don't know. What do you want to do?
Why don't we talk about conflict? So you just gave up. I love conflict when I win. Winning is the, right? Isn't that the goal of conflict?
For some, it actually it is. Absolutely. But for most of us, we know, and you and I both know, we engage in great conversation to get the best possible outcome. So for some, winning is the ultimate goal.
So let's back up for a second. All joking aside, conflict comes up all the time. How is this related to persuasion? Let's start there and bring our listeners in.
Well, there's different strategies to handle conflict. And if you're going to be able to persuade someone, if you do it ineffectively, that can lead to conflict.
So conflict can lead to more conflict is what I just heard.
Correct. And if you're going to persuade someone, if you do it in either a malicious way or an inappropriate way or unprofessional way, that can cause that other person to engage in conflict when the person wasn't trying to necessarily do that.
All right. So let's back up even a step farther then.
Let's do it.
What do you mean by conflict? Let's define conflict.
Well, you told me once that, or I said this once to you, the Chinese draw two characters, and we had a conversation about this. When they're talking about crisis, they draw two characters, danger and opportunity. And for me, conflict is there's a misunderstanding of a conversation or communication.
I'm struggling with, because I don't want to get distracted, because that's a common misperception. I believe it was JFK who was first quoted as saying that crisis is opportunity and danger. That's technically not actually accurate, but we don't need to go down to etymological. Did I just say that? Trail.
You did. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I surprised myself. So for me, conflict comes about when two or more people are competing for the same resource.
Okay.
Does that ring true? First of all, would you agree with me? Because we need to be on the same page on this one.
I am definitely on the same page with that. Absolutely.
So what would those resources look like in a sales and or leadership situation?
Well, from a sales perspective, it can be about money. It can be about deliverables. It can be about time frame. It can be about expectations. Those are four off the top of my head. And from your perspective on leadership, I would love to hear your perspective, and I'll be happy to chime in.
Again, it's resources. So the leader, it could be, again, same thing, time, right? So we only have so much time in a day or week or month, and we need to figure out where we're going to put our energy. So we have different priorities. What that really means is we're conflicting over time because we can't do it all, get it all done. It could be physical resources, people resources. You need to work with somebody who I need to work with because they're a specialist of some sort. So that certainly would create conflict. What were the other ones you said in sales? Expectations, right?
Yep. Yes. And we talked about that in a podcast, talking about managing and setting those expectations up front, which would alleviate potential conflict.
Right. And we'll get into, I think, in a little bit, techniques to alleviate conflict or potentially avoid them. Well, you know, that's one technique. But expectations, absolutely, in leadership, if we have a misunderstanding about what our goals and objectives are, therefore we think that we are both going about it in different ways because of that misunderstanding, that would create a conflict. And that's a conflict of the resource of expectation. So, okay. So I think it's the same then between sales and leadership. Once again, we see there's a confluence of needs here.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And it's interesting. The more and more we talk about this, the more we see there is a lot of congruence between both sales and leadership. And it's applicable to both areas of expertise that you and I have both had over the years.
All right. So we know what conflict is. Do we want to get into what it looks like? Because we need to recognize we're in conflict before we can deal with it. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. Yes. So, you know, I used to say, and I would love to, maybe I'll find out who exactly it was. I thought it was Oliver Wendell Holmes, but it wasn't him. An attorney corrected me on that. That was trying to define obscenity. And he said, for a Supreme Court, he said, I don't know how to define it, but I know it when I see it. A lot of times we know there's conflict because we can see it or feel it or hear it. And conversations and communications with others. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I absolutely agree. Sometimes I know, personally speaking, I'll go back many, many years ago, when I was engaged to my practice wife, which I guess would be my practice engagement. And we were at a party and one of her coworkers and I got in a conversation about something and I thought their position was incorrect. Mm-hmm. And I got really aggressive about my point of view, which I know anybody who knows me would understand that that's completely shocking. Not. And my practice fiance was really justifiably upset with me because I was aggressive in my approach. So conflict definitely looks like aggression is certainly one way conflict will manifest. And I think that's an easy one to spot. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. And I know one of my techniques that I have used over the years, and my kids can hear it, when I say things like, can you help me understand what you're thinking here? And I get extremely polite. I don't know if it was, you know, being raised by nuns in high school or not, but when I get involved in conflict, I get extremely polite, extremely. And so help me understand, with all due respect, they know that there's something else coming, you know, when we're around other people. And I use that one, then they know there's definitely conflict. So I think there's maybe some different tells we use, and we may or may not even be aware of it.
What I'm getting is it's really important to be self-aware of when we ourselves get into conflict. Mm-hmm. It's probably good step one to recognize that a conflict has occurred. Right? Because if we're not aware, if we don't know that we're in a conflict, we have no way of handling it. It seems sort of silly to say it when you say it out loud. Mm-hmm. But we get so often in our lives, we get wrapped up into our position. We don't even recognize, at least personally speaking, and hopefully less today than 20 years ago for me.
Right.
I think that's a safe statement, but it still happens. And you just sort of start digging your heels in and trying to get your point across. And you become less, at least for me, I become less and less effective until I recognize that's where I am.
Right. Absolutely.
What else do you think? So for you, you get polite. For me, I can get aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Even if I'm not aggressive verbally, because I've learned to not verbalize that aggression, my mental mm-hmm. state definitely still today gets there. That mm-hmm. no, gosh, they're wrong, and
yep.
I'm going to drive this point home. So I've tried to learn to listen to that voice mm-hmm. in my head. I wonder what it's like for a visual, right? And we talked about neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, yep. in a podcast. Wonder what that's like, how they experience that. For me, as I said, it's a voice in my head. I can hear the anger.
Well, I mean, for visual people, for self-awareness or seeing in others? I just want to make sure I'm understanding.
Self-awareness. I think that's the first step.
Gosh, self-awareness visually. Well, if they look themselves in the mirror, they'll probably see they're turning red. That would be a pretty easy one. I've seen a lot of people get really red when they're engaged in conflict. That's visually. I know this is probably more kinesthetically, but sometimes people will, you know, make a fist if they're angry. You know, they'll do that, or they'll there may be a tell. Like, I know I have, when my dad was alive, when he was really mad, he would, before he would say anything, he would rub his face. And I don't know if he knew it, but I knew it. So I don't know about self-awareness, because we're both auditory. So we are, we're trying to figure this out together on the fly, aren't we?
We are. So listeners out there, here's what I'd love for you guys to do. If you're visual, and statistically 55% of you are, mm-hmm. put some comments in about how you know when you're in conflict. What's that look like for you when you're yeah. seeing red? And I don't mean what are you, how is that you experience? Like I said, for, and I know I can speak for Darren, as an auditory, I can just, my inner voice gets angry. And even if I get sometimes calm, in fact, it was a technique I used with my mother all the time. We used to tick her off when we get into conflict when I was a teenager, is the angrier she got, the quieter I got.
Yeah.
Which, it, by the way, if you're just looking to tick people off, that's a great technique.
yes.
All right. Yeah. So be self-aware when you're in conflict. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you may not realize you're in conflict because you're not really in anger or in that place. Right. But the other person is.
Right.
You gave some good tells right there. What else? How else would you identify that you're in conflict with somebody?
Well, kinesthetically, sometimes I feel it in my heart. My heart could start racing, or I can feel it in my gut, like someone just kicked me. I mean, that's kind of a kinesthetic tell that I'm engaged in conflict as well.
That's self-awareness. Now I want to switch to awareness of others. So from right. from emotional sure. intelligence perspective, right? The first level is being aware of your own state, but the yep. the next level is yep. being aware of other state.
Well, I mean, from an auditory perspective, someone could be raising their voice. That's one way. Someone could be visually, someone could be turning red. Someone could be pounding their fist or hitting their table or doing something. When you're talking, they're looking up in the air. They turn their back, almost, not necessarily turn their back, but they may. They turn their head away when you're trying to talk with them. They may back up when you're talking with them. There's a lot of tells.
They may move forward. They could invade your personal space.
They could move forward very quickly. Absolutely. Absolutely. Depends on the approach that they take, and we'll talk about that in a bit. Absolutely.
So we've identified when we're in conflict, or whether because we our blood is up, or because you're in conflict if the other person's in conflict with you. You just may not know it. Or right. you've seen visual tells or auditory tells that let you know the other person is in conflict as well. And it, frankly, it may not get heated. But what we're about to discuss, which are ways to resolve conflict effectively, it may not always be heated. So let's make sure we're cognizant of that as well. It just could be a casual, calm conversation about you want to do this and I want to do that, and we only have so much time or so many resources or so many people, and we're trying to figure out how we could both get it done, or how you can get it done or I can get it done, because we believe our way or is more important, or our desire trumps the other person's desire. Right? So it's not always an aggressive conflict.
Right. I totally agree. So let's start talking about the different ways that people can handle conflict. And after that, we'll talk about when and where to use those various approaches. Is that fair?
It sounds like a plan to me. So first of all, how many different techniques are there for handling conflict?
I believe there's 5 that I can think of off the top of my head.
I would agree with that. No conflict here.
And I think we should talk about the first one that, you know, maybe we should just skip that one. The first one's really not that important. Should we talk about the first one or should we just skip it?
Let's just skip it.
Yeah. Okay. So the first approach, if we were to skip it, because I'd feel sad because there's a time and a place for all these, is to avoid.
I thought we were avoiding this one.
We were, but there are people out there that say, you know what? I think it's important that they don't avoid avoidance.
All right. All right. So we're not going to avoid avoidance. But I agree with you. You can simply avoid conflict, avoid the situation, ignore it.
Yep. And there's times in people's lives that is the appropriate techniques to utilize, you know. And if I could think of an animal that would best represent it, it would be a turtle. And a turtle can just stay inside its shell and everything is okay. And the avoidance approach works on certain things. It's just like, this is not my mountain to climb or my hill to climb or my battle to win. I'm just going to stay out of this. And there's a lot of things going on in our world right now that there are some people that are choosing to avoid. They're just, this is not my thing. I'm not even going to engage in it. Don't want to hear about it. Don't want to talk about it. Don't even bring it up. That's an avoidance technique.
And there are, and we'll get more into the appropriate times for each of these, but you know, somebody out there right now is probably saying to themselves, wow, that's a head in the sand and that doesn't solve anything. But believe it or not, there are actually times when avoidance is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
So sit tight and we'll circle back and we'll talk about that. But I'm just asking our listeners out there to be open to avoidance. Even if you're like me and you typically are a high D and we'll cover DISC in a different podcast. But if you're like me and you like to take on problems head on, that doesn't mean that's always the right approach.
Absolutely right. I totally agree. Well, speaking of taking on problems head on, then let's go to something that might be perceived to be opposite of avoid, and that would be to compete. And the animal, if you will, because, you know, there's 3 kingdoms, right? Animal, vegetable, and mineral. The animal would be a shark.
Well, hold on a second. I wasn't going to go with compete next, but you know what? I'll acquiesce. I'll let you go with compete.
Well, we can always talk about accommodate if that's the one you'd rather go to next. You know, it's your choice, sir. What would you prefer?
Well, and folks, what we're doing here is illustrating a couple of things. When you compete, well, let's come back. Let's define competition first. Right. Then we'll talk about accommodation. And then I want to distinguish between accommodation and avoidance.
Absolutely.
Because they may sound like the same thing, but they're not.
Absolutely. Sure. So for me, compete is there's an end goal and that person wants to win. Whether that's in resources we talked about earlier, it's an argument, it's a point of view, it's a thought, it's a relationship, whatever. They want to be declared the winner, whether it's in their own mind or from other people. That's compete in my mind.
I think that's it. You're competing to win. There's going to be a winner and there's going to be, and this is important, there is a winner and there is a loser. And this is from the competitor's perspective.
Yep.
Right. It doesn't mean that and you'll understand in a second why I say this, it doesn't mean the person who doesn't win actually lost. But from the competitor's perspective, it's my way or the highway. And this is the way it's going to be. And that's competition.
Yes. And the challenge with someone that's going to compete is they may or may not know it, but someone that's not a competitive person, if you will, may personalize the issue, where the competitive person might just say, this is just business, or this is just the way it needs to be done. And this is not, don't take it personally, but.
Now, that's an interesting statement, because there are times when, just like there's times when avoidance is appropriate, there are. I'm a professional speaker, folks, and I don't know the difference between is and are. There are times when competition is also appropriate.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I have three children, Dave, and I demonstrate very much shark-like behavior when I think my children are being marginalized or not treated the way they deserve to be treated over the years by coaches, by teachers. Oh, I've taken them on. Absolutely have taken on some very strong sharks. So it's a shark versus shark. And it's shark week.
Yes, I'm going to disagree with you here. It's not always shark versus shark. So think of this from your perspective. Mm-hmm. You're being the shark. That doesn't mean the other person is necessarily the shark. It's just, if they are a shark, you know, then fight's on.
Right. And that's what that is. They were sharks. They're sharks every day. And they were not used to someone else being shark-like with them.
Right. So we'll come back once again. We'll come back to when to use each of these techniques, mm-hmm. because in business, as a leader, or even as a sales professional, there very well could be times when being a shark, you know, when the shark bites, mm-hmm. his teeth, yeah, right? When you want to be Mac the Messer, right? Mac
the Knife. So, when Mac the Knife comes out, I think, I am so impressed. I think I'd like to move on to the next one. If you're okay with that, if you're not comfortable with it, then we can continue to have you sing more of a song. I just want to, for the listeners, I want them to continue to listen. If you or me, what should we do next?
Well, you certainly don't want me to continue singing, if that's what you want to call it, if you want listeners to stick around.
Fair enough. All right, so why don't we talk about the next one, which would be an accommodator. And that's one that I would say is a teddy bear, and they care so much about the relationship that the issue takes second fiddle many times.
Once again, you and I are going to be in disagreement, because the way you're presenting these styles, and I recognize that we all have a different preferred style.
Yes.
And to that degree, you're right, that somebody whose preference is an accommodator may appear like a teddy bear. Somebody whose preference is to be a competitor will appear like a shark. Somebody mm-hmm. whose preference is avoidance may appear turtle-like.
Mm-hmm.
But all of us understand that each and every one of these techniques is appropriate to use at certain times.
Absolutely.
So what I want to make sure our listeners understand is that knowing these techniques, and it's not like this is a tennis technique or you know, a sport technique that you have to practice. Mm-hmm. It's just being aware that all of these are valid models, and choosing the right one at the right time.
Exactly.
Is the point here. So as a leader or as a sales professional, knowing when to pull which tool out of your belt and use it is invaluable. So accommodation basically means letting the other person have their way.
Yep.
And that's different from avoidance, because accommodation is actually affirmatively letting them have their way, where avoidance is you're just not even dealing with it.
That's right. Absolutely. I agree.
Okay. So we've covered 3 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I am sure our listeners out there are screaming right now, but the most important thing to do in conflict is to compromise.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when I talk about this in seminars and in trainings, people say you're looking for a win-win and a compromise is a win-win. I say it's a wah-wah. You only get the W. Each side gets a W. They're not getting the W-I-N. It's not a win. And I know you shared that's potentially a lose-lose scenario where people are giving and no one's winning. And so a lot of times we think, and as children, we learn just compromise, just compromise, just compromise. And in business, and there is a time and a place, and in business and in leadership and in sales, that's a very difficult one to just compromise. And a lot of times my opinion is when people are engaging in compromise, they'd rather be done than to engage in the conflict.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that that's necessarily the case, but so for our listeners, and I think I'm going to put this in the show notes for you visuals who aren't going to necessarily be able to see what I'm about to describe, but I want you to picture a graph where the vertical axis represents you and getting your way, mm-hmm. and the horizontal axis represents the other party in this conflict. And remember, folks, this could be groups of people as well, but the other side of the conflict is the horizontal, the other person for our purposes. And so at the point where the two lines meet, nobody gets their way.
Right.
That's avoidance.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody gets their way. And then if you go up the vertical where you get your way and the other person doesn't get that way, their way, that's compromise, competition, because you're winning, they're losing, right? If you go along the horizontal line out to the right, now you, this is from your perspective, you're accommodating, you're letting them get their way, and you're giving in to them. Compromise is some point in the middle, where you're each giving up something,
mm-hmm.
and each potentially gaining something as well, but not everything. And that's the Darren's point, the WW. It's not a win-win. You've given up the IN. You each gave up the IN. You just get the woo-woo. Or from my perspective, you lose-lose because you each gave up something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to jump on Darren's theme of assigning an animal to each of these, because again, we each have a tendency to go a certain way. If you prefer to compromise, I think the perfect animal for that is the cuckoo bird. The cuckoo bird is what's known as a brood parasite. They lay their eggs in other birds' nests because they put all their energy into laying eggs. They don't have the time for nest building and or rearing. And so they give up the joy of parenthood for the ability to propagate the species. So that's the W is they're propagating themselves. What they lose, the IN, is they're not able to raise their own youngs. They have other people do that. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that's a great imagery for a compromise. You're a cuckoo bird.
Mm-hmm. I like
so,
it.
So we're at 4 out of 5. What's our fifth one?
The last one is collaborate. And that's when two parties will get together. It needs to be not just over one issue or one challenge. There's lots of things to discuss on the table and things to put on the table to figure out what's the best approach to handle or how to solve something. And the animal for me is clever or sly as a fox.
So on that graph that I was describing earlier, collaboration is that point opposite the corner where the two lines meet, where both parties get what they want,
mm-hmm.
because they're collaborating and coming up with a creative way that everybody gets what they want. And what I think Darren just said here is really important. You can only collaborate when you have more than one issue on the table, more than one, what I call vector. If it's a piece of cake and there's one slice of pie left, and either you're going to get it or your wife is going to get it. So what's going to happen? You can compete. I'm going to take it first and eat it. Mm-hmm. You win, she loses. Trust me, folks, you didn't just win, but that's a whole nother conversation. You could just avoid the issue, and avoidance looks like you just put it in the fridge and neither one of you deal with it today. You're going to deal with it tomorrow morning when you get up early and eat it. And trust me, you didn't win then either.
Mm-hmm.
But right, you avoided the issue for now. You can accommodate, honey, why don't you take it? You can compromise, why don't we cut the slice in half? And although we'll each get some, we don't get the whole slice. Mm-hmm. Or we can collaborate and go, you know, I really want that last slice of pizza. You want the pie. If you give me up that last slice of pizza, I'll give you the slice of cake or pie, whatever we're talking about. Right? But it only works when there's another vector there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So those are the five modes of conflict resolution. And as we've been talking about, we each have a preference. And mm-hmm. I think knowing that preference is important because that's our go-to. And if you're not aware of it, you go there without thought, like I did many years ago at that party to alienate my wife's practice fiance's coworker. That's a mouthful.
Well, I was thinking, Dave, there's a couple of factors to look at to determine what approach makes the most sense. May I share those very quickly?
Sure.
So I share with my clients, the first one is the power of the person that you're engaged with the conflict with. If I want to talk with a potential prospect about terms, it's probably not my best interest to come at it like a shark's perspective. That's probably not going to compete. It's probably not going to be in my best interest because there's a power difference that I'm trying to get something. Or if an officer pulls me over for speeding, it's not in my best interest to be a shark at that moment. So the issue is the power. That's one of the factors to consider. Does that make sense?
It does. I would go from a different perspective.
Please do.
Not when doesn't it make sense, but really when does it make sense?
And right.
So from my perspective, when does it make sense to be a shark? When a decision has to be reached quickly.
Yes.
When there's an emergency coming up, when it seems that no other option is available, i.e. you've explored compromise, acquiescence isn't an option. Avoidance isn't, it's too important to acquiesce or to avoid. Compromise doesn't work. Collaboration doesn't work. And you're under a time constraint. So quite frequently, for example, in leadership, I'll tell people, we have a problem come up and I'll bring the team together and I'll say, all right, here's the problem. Let's work out a solution. And the solutions that are presented are not workable because most of the time as leaders, we have a perspective, that you try and communicate why it's not working and what the parameters are. But at the end of the day, you're like, we need to make a decision. Here's how it's going to be.
Right.
Okay. So that's competition. It's going to be my way or the highway because it needs to be done now.
Right. And I just want to reiterate the four just to make sure I got this right. And what I was going to share, so that's great. There's a dynamic of power. There's a dynamic of what the issue is. There's a dynamic of time constraints, and there's a dynamic of the relationship. And those are the key four that I'm going to look at to see what style is in my best interest and in the situation's best interest of which approach to use for conflict.
That makes perfect sense. So
go ahead.
So I think we've covered when being a shark, when competition makes the most sense.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of skipped avoidance, which I just start there myself because it's at bottom left corner of the graph. We mm-hmm. kind of avoided that. When does it make sense to use avoidance as a technique for conflict?
Well, in personal lives, there's two parties they don't really want to engage, so they just tend to, based on this particular issue, they're just not going to engage in that issue. They may engage in other issues, but for this one right there, just going to let that go. We're not even going to touch that. Or they may say, let's agree to disagree, which can be a compromise, I guess. But to me, we're not going to engage in this particular issue at this particular point. And like you said, if you put the food in the refrigerator, you don't deal with it today or even deal with it all until you throw it away. That's when people will demonstrate the avoidance.
So I think for me, it comes down to relative importance.
Yep.
And so I'll disagree with you. I think agree to disagree, and we could agree mm-hmm. to disagree on this, isn't compromise, it's avoidance. Because uh-huh. you're not settling the situation.
Yep.
You're just saying, we're going to disagree and we're not going to come to a resolution on this, so we're just going to avoid it. And when it's unimportant, And you think about when people say something like that, usually it's some philosophical conversation where I'm saying left and you're saying right, or I'm saying up and you're saying down. And at some point you're going, you know what? We've beat this horse. It's dead. It's decayed. It's been reborn again in another existence. And we still haven't moved each other's opinion. It's really not that important. Let's just agree to disagree and move on.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. And so once again, we talk about the big four. That's the issue. The issue is not important. This is an approach to use, right? Absolutely.
Right.
And if we look at, and we can look at each one and go, if you ask yourself the big four, is this an important issue? How much time do I have? What's the power relationship here? And then also, what's the relationship I have with that person? To me, is a key on how to handle any conflict if you look at those big four.
I'd have to chew on that for a little bit. Some of those, the power relationship one, for me, doesn't seem that important in all of that.
Okay. But
time, importance, those two resonate really well with me.
Mm-hmm.
Because whether or not I'm in a superior subordinate power relationship, if it's important to me, right. So for me, I look at import and I go, okay, if it's important to me, it's not important to the other person, right? Then, or whether it's important to the other person, if it's important to me, I'm either going to go compromise, I'm not going to avoid and I'm not going to accommodate. That's just
right.
Important. Right. Rules those two out. And then depending on, I guess I'm thinking this through. That's my first thing. Where is it on the importance scale?
Yep.
And then where is it on the time scale if it's important? Because if it's not important, I don't care about the time scale.
That's true.
Importance goes first, then my time scale.
Mm-hmm.
The power relationship, I guess, would come into play next in the sense I might take a different approach if I'm a subordinate than I would if I was a superior.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I'm coming around to your way of thinking. What was the fourth one?
Did you talk about the time?
Right, time. Time to me was second to importance.
Yep. And the relationship. What's the relationship I have with this person? How, whether it's an important interpersonal relationship, whether it's a business relationship, and I think that comes into play too. As far as familiarity, that sort of thing comes into play. Or if I'm very familiar with that person, I may approach this situation differently than if I don't have a strong relationship, one way or the other. Does that make sense?
It does. Now I'm just trying to think where I would stick that in my hierarchy of decision making.
Right.
I would probably put relationship, certainly would put it above power structure.
Yep.
It would probably float between time. Yeah, number two or number three spot, depending depending on whether it's it'd probably float there. Importance would probably still be my number one, right? And I see this as a way of eliminating. Right? Okay, how important is this to me? If it's not important, I'm either going to accommodate, potentially compromise, but depending on where it is in the importance scale. But certainly, if it's towards the bottom, a compromise would be my best potential solution, and then either avoid or accommodate. If it's more important than not, then compromise is my worst possible solution, and I'm either going to try and collaborate if there's more than one vector, or I'm sorry, my mind just went blank on the other resolution type.
Sure. Yeah, and to me, if our listeners just think about those four components, and for you, that's a good order for you. To me, I don't necessarily put them in a hierarchy. I love the thing that you said is the issue, the importance. Number one, that makes total sense to me. And some of the others may fluctuate depending on our listeners' typical way to handle conflict. Because if they're more of an accommodator, the next important thing might be a relationship.
You're right.
You know, so it can fluctuate. I think it's really helpful to look at the four and say, okay, and I love your thought of, you know, the issue is the most important, makes total sense. Cause if not, I can move on. I mean, if I'm going to collaborate, we know that takes time. And so I want to make sure that that issue is important and or that relationship is important. So it all depends where people want to put those.
I think that's a great way of looking at it. And I guess the lesson here that I think everybody should take is take some time now when you're not in conflict and think about how you want to approach this. What's important to you in most of the situations? And again, that'll change from relationship to relationship a bit. That's where the relationship does come into play. You might go, you know, a business relationship, I'm going to deal different from a personal relationship. But think about that now, and I think you'll be in good stead. So when does compromise make sense in your book?
I think compromise, when it's beneficial to be compromising, are you saying?
Yes.
Personal or professional lives?
Yes.
Both, right. Well, personal, for me, it's, you know, my kids may suggest something, I suggest something else, we meet in the middle on something. A lot of times in business, people will talk about budget and they'll automatically go higher, knowing they're going to meet in the middle. And you've probably heard that technique, right? You know, you're going to offer this, so you're going to buy a car, you offer this, you're going to meet here. Or in business, you want something. And so you, when you're looking at the budget piece, which we'll talk about in another podcast, when you're talking about the budget piece, you may go, okay, let's say you wanted $10,000. So you may offer a different number and then they'll come up and they'll come down and you compromise. I think that's when that comes into play in the sales arena. We're just going to compromise on that. Or it might be even on the terms. You want this, I want this, let's meet in the middle, let's get the deal done. That's where compromise comes into play, I think, in the sales arena.
Yeah, I would agree with that. In fact, compromise is an intentional strategy you just alluded to, where you come in or ask for more than you want.
Yep.
Knowing that there's a, actually, it's interesting. Dr. Robert Cialdini talks about this in his book, Influence, The Art and Science. People's tendency when they say no to the first thing is to say yes to the second.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't want to say no twice. And so that's it's potentially abusive influence or persuasion technique to get somebody to say yes by doing that. I had a sales manager years ago. I remember I went into his office one day and he's just sort of muttering to himself. And I said, Alan, what's going on? And he said, Barbara, that's his wife, wants to move. I said, wants to move? You guys just bought your condo. They had been renting this condo and the owner decided to sell. So they bought it. So they didn't have to move and they owned it. And he goes, yeah, she said she was kind of tired of it and she wanted to move. So what you do? He said, well, I told her I didn't want to move. And she said, well, if we're not going to move, I'd like to get all new furniture. And I looked at him. I said, Alan, don't you know what she just did? He goes, what? She asked for something big so that when you said no, you'd agree to the furniture. That's all she wanted in the first place. And he looked at me because he had taught me that technique and was dumbfounded that he fell for it.
Brilliant. Yep, that's brilliant. Absolutely. That's a great example.
So, and then, of course, collaboration, when there's more than one vector and you have the time, that's important. When you have more than one vector, it's important enough to put the time in, because I think that's really insightful of you. Collaboration, it doesn't always, but frequently it takes time. So if you have the time, you have more than one vector, you can put your heads together and figure out the true win-win, because collaboration is that win-win, right? So I think of it like this. Avoidance is lose-lose. Nobody's going to get the resource. So when I say lose, I mean no one's getting the resource. When you are what was the shark? What was I? I'm just blanking on that. The shark compete, right? When you compete, it's a win-lose. You win, they lose. Mm-hmm. If you acquiesce, it's a lose-win. You lose, they mm-hmm. win. Mm-hmm. As we've said, compromise is woo-woo or lose-lose, depending on your perspective. I think woo-woo is better. Mm-hmm. And so I'll acquiesce to that one. And then collaboration is the true win-win.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. When you are collaborating, both sides have to be willing to come up with the best possible outcome.
Correct. And it's not always possible. Sometimes right. you start off trying to collaborate and you end up compromising. But that's the right. goal, the goal there is to give everybody what they want, not all of what they want, not some of what they want. And that's right. that's true collaboration.
Absolutely. Well done, sir.
Likewise. I think we went a little long today, folks, but hopefully you got something out of this and you've enjoyed this. If you could, in the comments, please let us know what, if you're visual especially, but even if you're not, let us know what you think you are in terms of your primary, wow, my brain is just not working today.
Method for handling conflict.
You know, I was actually thinking your primary sensory. If you go back to our NLP, neuro-linguistic programming.
Sure.
Tell us what you think conflict looks like to you mm-hmm. based on your primary sensory modality. Perfect. And then also how you think you prefer to handle conflict and what techniques you might have.
Absolutely. Yep. That'd be wonderful for them to share that with us.
All right. Great show, Darren.
Pleasure, Dave. Have yourself a great one.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
That concludes another episode of Disarming Persuasion. My name's Dave Rosenberg.
And this is Darren Cecil.
Visit our websites at LockedOnLeadership.com or DarrenCecil.com. Follow us on social media. You can find the links in the show notes. Remember, if they fail to make a decision, you failed to disarm them.